Good morning, and welcome to the Thursday, March 18th, 2021 meeting of the Education Finance Committee. Remote hearings are held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to in our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members have the contents of their virtual packets available to them, and for the public, these same materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for all of these items in one place, they're attached in the calendar event that you have that Ms. Burt sent for today. To get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on the list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, would you please call the roll?
Chair Dabney.
Present.
Vice Chair Sandsted.
Present.
Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha. Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Damuth.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson. Representative Thompson. Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
And that is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sunderland. Chair Marquardt, have you had the opportunity to review the minutes from Wednesday, March 17th? And if so, would you like to move approval?
Mr. Chair, I will move approval of those minutes.
Thank you very much. Any discussion, members, to the Marquardt motion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the Marquardt motion to approve the minutes from Wednesday, March 17th, please signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you.
Members, today in committee we'll be hearing and laying over two bills for possible inclusion, House File 1083 from Representative Mueller and House File 1422 from Representative Mariani. Because we are laying them over, we will not be taking any formal motions today. Representative Zhang, would you like to make a motion to move House File 1083 before the committee and to lay it over for possible further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
So move for possible inclusion, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. Members of the committee and members of the public were looking to lay this bill over by 10:55 a.m. Representative Mueller, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with introducing your bill.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. I'm really happy to present House File 1083 before the members of the committee today. Members, House File 1083 creates a lead position at MDE to assist school districts in assessing their response to student mental health and to develop evidence-based practices. As somebody who lost a teenage family friend to suicide in 2017, I began to realize that student mental health was in a state of crisis. And even before the pandemic, every educator I talked to said students were experiencing growing mental health needs and that those needs were not being met. Students have also been telling us that this is a big problem. In 2020, suicide was the second leading cause of death for young people. The 2019 student survey indicated a growing number of students who felt depressed and anxious, and an alarming rate of students who had seriously contemplated suicide. And this was all before the pandemic. In 2019, I had the opportunity to attend a National Conference of State Legislators suicide prevention convening. And I learned there that many other states had a better response to student mental health, including a position similar to the one that we are creating in this bill. The Comprehensive Student Mental Health Services Lead will be able to assist school districts by assessing the quality of their school mental health systems, collecting local, state, and national mental health resources and providing that information to schools, sharing evidence-based strategies with districts, along with other information about available grants, training for teachers and staff, and mental health curricula for students. This bill has bipartisan support, and it has been improved in the interim with the assistance of MDE, who I want to thank for their help, and they're available today for questions. In addition, this has the strong support of NAMI, and Sue Abderholden is also available for questions. The Minnesota School Counselors Association, Education Minnesota, Ed Allies, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the Coalition for Children with Disabilities, and others have all indicated their support. There are several letters of support in your packets. A fiscal note has also been prepared in relation to this position, and Mr. Chair, Amy Jones is my only testifier today.
Thank you, Representative Mahler. Ms. Jones, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Dabney and members of the committee. My name's Amy Jones. Thank you for having me today. I am an educational consultant working on improving mental health for students and school staff in Minnesota schools. I am an appointed member of the State Advisory on Mental Health and the Mental Health in Schools Work Group. I am also a licensed teacher and have worked in Minnesota public education for over 28 years. In addition, I served two terms on the Mounds View School Board and spent much of my tenure advocating for improved mental health in our district. Representative Mahler and I have been working to provide more mental health support in Minnesota schools after seeing a growing and timely need. House File 1083 would put Minnesota in line with other states that have a mental health in schools lead or director in the Department of Education. We are one of only six states as of the last legislative session that did not have such a position in their state's Department of Ed. This position would not be tied to overseeing a grant. Rather, it would provide a much needed contact person to address the many challenges and opportunities currently facing our school staff and students' mental health. Daily, I hear from students, teachers, principals, superintendents, and school board members. They are all telling me the same story. They know that students and teachers are struggling with deteriorating and pervasive mental health challenges, and they don't know who to contact at MDE. These challenges make teaching and learning much more difficult. The Comprehensive School Mental Health Services Lead position at MDE would serve as a source of information and support for all of our stakeholders. They could identify and scale up some of the innovative practices that already exist in our districts. As a state, we can do better for all of our students and school staff to help support and address improved mental health in schools. This MDE position would connect mental health expertise with the teaching and learning expertise. This position could help teachers as we hopefully move toward requiring mental health education, as well as disseminating information, training, and resources to address the most common mental health and school challenges, which are anxiety and depression. There are specific instructional practices that we can implement that could benefit all students. This information needs to be shared widely. This position is long overdue, and if the pandemic has shown us anything, it has illuminated this glaring and growing need to improve mental health in our schools. Our students and school staff deserve the support. I thank you for your time, and I hope for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Jones. Questions from members? Please note that Representative Kreisha is excused for today. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the department available?
Mr. Uni is here. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for the department. So we know that mental health issues have been growing over the years. So explain to us, Mr. Uni, what has MDE been doing to assist districts before you brought forth this idea of having a lead? I mean, have they not been interacting with districts? Explain this to the committee so we understand more fully what the department has been doing and what more they will do if they have this position.
Mr. Uni? Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education, and Representative Erickson, thanks for the question. So we did provide technical assistance on this bill for the Representative Mahler, and while this isn't part of the governor's budget, this proposal would provide us with resources to provide more of a comprehensive directed approach towards comprehensive mental health services. But to your question about what we're currently doing, Right now, we have resources spread across several divisions that we use to assist our school districts, our educators, and our students around mental health services. Our special education division provides health services through our implementation work under IDEA, as well as the work that we do under our multi-tiered systems of support work, specifically with our positive behavioral intervention support systems and the professional development that we do around that, as well as implementation work on the district level. Our Equity and Opportunity Division administers federal Title IV program Part A that allows schools to use federal funds for school mental health programs. And then our Division of School Support, which has provided a lot of the assistance and technical assistance on this bill, and the School Climate Center, as we know, that was passed back in 2014 with the great help of Chair Dabney, has received two federal grants that address some of the aspects of comprehensive mental health systems. And the two federal grants are the School Climate Transformation Grant from the U.S. Department of Education and Project AWARE, which is Advancing Wellness and Resiliency in Education, and the State Education Agency grant from the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. And then we've done a lot of work through the School Climate Center in terms of providing our model plan for anti-bullying, as well as providing assistance to best practices implementation for districts. And a lot of our anti-bullying work does have a mental health component to it.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Oney. So how about the regional centers of excellence? How have they been engaged in helping our schools and our charters?
Mr. Oney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, I don't actually have the exact information on what the regional centers have been doing in this space on an ongoing basis. I know that they do a lot of work around core academic subjects in terms of implementation work for our members, but I know that a lot of their staff stand ready to be able to help implement best practices. I just don't have any examples on hand of the work that they've been doing.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question, Mr. Oney. So what do you envision at the department with this lead? Is this going to be an official office area, a cubicle, or, you know, how do you envision this? And I looked at the fiscal note, so I'm not sure if that's going to cover staff in addition to the salary of the lead, but explain to us how we can expect this to look different from what's going on now.
Mr. Oney?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, that's a great question. So as I had mentioned, currently we have some services that some of our staff members through our federal grants and through some of our other efforts are able to offer in the space. So it's spread across several divisions, and it's not as coordinated as this position would be. So this position, yes, would be one FTE. In the world we live in now, I'm not sure if it would be virtual cubicle. I imagine they would have a workspace at the department. But one of the areas that they would be engaged in is conducting train-the-trainer aspects, right? They really want to get out, provide the best practices to our educators and to our school system. So they would be traveling around as well, providing that implementation assistance, but it would be one individual. I think that this individual would probably live, and I can't guarantee it, I think it would be up to the department, but in the Division of School Support that all currently hosts the School Climate Center, they have some supervisors and assistant directors that have a lot of experience and research in this area, so they would be providing pretty good resources and supervision for this work.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Oney, I hope there will be a report on this, you know, to us if this becomes part of the education code. Because members, you know, we enact these staff additions or we enact policy, but we don't do the implementation. So it's really important that we know from the department and from all the resources to which they might refer what the evidence is that we're doing a better job with our children as they experience these growing needs in mental health. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Oney.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Sandstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe just to kind of follow up on the question from Representative Erickson, in an indirect way, or maybe a little more indirect way. I know the department, you know, consulted and worked with the legislature in the last session when we required ongoing professional development in a suicide prevention for our students. So I think that this is a natural position to have, especially born out of concern for the increase in mental health issues that, you know, districts are seeing and students are dealing with. So I appreciate this work very much. And maybe Mr. Uni has something to comment on that. But it wasn't that long ago that we put that safeguard into place and that requirement for teachers and that training in place to help with this issue. So thank you very much.
Mr. Uni, any response?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Uaking.
I just want to thank Representative Mueller for bringing forward this bill. This is exactly what we need to be doing up here, working with stakeholders, seeing a need and filling a hole. And I think it is really important to have this position at MDE to tie up all those loose ends. Mr. Uni did a really good job explaining about all the different things MDE is doing, but I kind of look at it as a scattered loose ends all over, and they're tying it into one big knot with this position to coordinate and make sure that resources are there for school districts when they have questions. They have that one person to go to connect them to the resources that are out there, but also to coordinate the programming and to coordinate the trainers. And frankly, one position doesn't seem to be enough for all that's going on, but it's a really good start. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Uaking. Representative Bennett, our last member question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And another question for Mr. Uni. Sorry to pick on you so much, Mr. Uni. Just wondering, you know, we need to obviously react to this great increase in mental health issues in our schools and in kids in general. Wondering if the Department of Education, or perhaps it's the Department of Health, and you maybe wouldn't know the answer to it in that case, but who is delving into what's causing this? Obviously, you know, with this great increase, something or things are driving this in our kids. Has that been looked at so that we can kind of get to the source of the problem?
Representative Bennett, an excellent question. Mr. Uni, what is the cause of student mental health challenges?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, that is a good question. I do laugh because it is well above my pay grade, not because it's not a great question. I think that is one of the reasons why resources in this area, whether it be the comprehensive mental health services position, the health services position we have in our bill, or a range of other proposals that would provide us the resources to continue to look at this and collaborate with our other agencies. I think you pointed out that the Department of Health and probably the Department of Human Services also have a lot of expertise in this area. I'm fairly certain, I just haven't done the research before in terms of who's been doing the work in this area in our agencies, but I do know that there is collaboration. There are experts at our division working with academics, experts nationally at the state looking at these on a daily basis, but I don't have the work in front of me to provide that, but I'm sure we could have a whole week of hearings on that. Just on that issue alone.
Thank you, Mr. Rooney. And Representative Bennett, I think a week's worth of hearings is more than we can bite off at this point in the session, but I think your concern is spot on, and Mr. Rooney's pointing to the complexity of it is also right on. Representative Mueller, I see you have your hand raised, and I'm not sure whether it's to respond to this question or you're anticipating your closing statement, but either way, balls to you, ma'am.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to note that Sue Abderholden from NAMI is on the call. And I think Representative Bennett's question was excellent. And I wondered if Ms. Abderholden would be able to speak a little bit more to her question.
Certainly. Ms. Abderholden, please state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Member Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. There isn't an easy answer to that question. It's kind of like a whole slew of things that are impacting young people these days. Some of it is certainly social media and kind of the negative aspects of that. Bullying certainly plays a role. Having access to lethal means certainly plays a role. And I think just sometimes the young people are impulsive, and so sometimes it's kind of hard to predict. And so we want to make sure that we're intervening in that way too. But I do think we have to remember, you know, when many of us were young, if we were getting bullied or we felt out of place at school, we would go home and close the door, and we had a chance to heal overnight, to be honest. You don't get to do that anymore with social media. It's constant. And so kind of having, you know, questioning yourself and your ability to do things and how you fit into the world, all of that just frankly makes it really more difficult for young people today.
Ms. Avderholden, one of the striking statistics that came out late last week from the Department of Health was a welcomed 15% decrease, 16% perhaps, decrease in suicide amongst young people, teenagers to, I think, some young adult. I forget the exact age threshold that they cut off at, but very welcome and a little bit counterintuitive, because we've been having a lot of conversations through this pandemic about the mental health demands on particularly young people disconnected from traditional in-person schooling. Can you, I don't know if it's speculate, but can you respond and maybe help us better understand that data?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. So think about it as kind of two different groups of kids, right? So you have a group of kids that were functioning fine before the pandemic and then became isolated and are struggling with that. And then you have the kids who were struggling before the pandemic, not having to go into the building, be bullied, feel out of place, kids who are struggling with social isolation. It's actually been easier for some of those kids to be at home. So it, I know that seems kind of odd, but you've got kids who were struggling before who felt safer at home. And then you've got kids who actually, you know, really wanted to be in the school and felt great there who are struggling by not being there. I do want to note that the suicide rate went up for the 18 to 26-year-olds, and so they seem to be struggling, frankly, more during the pandemic.
Okay, thank you for correcting that. I hadn't picked up that where the age cutoff was that they were looking at, so thank you for that. Representative Mohler, I know this has been a passion. You and I met, I think the first time you and I ever met was you came into my office to talk about this issue. And I believe with Ms. Jones, if I remember, I'm hoping I'm remembering correctly. So I appreciate your bringing your passion as well as the concerns of your community, because I know that your community is very concerned about this. Any closing statements on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank you for hearing this bill today and to the members of the committee for your really excellent questions and the discussion here. I also just want to give out the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, or text MN to 741-741. I think it's important whenever we're talking about suicide to make sure people know that help is available. And with that, members, I know this is being laid over, but I hope that you will support this if it comes before you in an omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And with that, Representative Zhang renews his motion that House File 1083 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Next up. Members, Representative Mariani is busy in another committee at this point, so we're going to recess for a few minutes. Ms. Burt, it's 10:55, so we're right on time. 10-minute recess. I'm looking for some guidance here.
Sure, 5 or 10 minutes would work.
Well, let's start with 5. And check back in at 11. But in the meantime, members, it's time for another cup of coffee for the day. Thank you. We are in recess. Representative Feist, would you like to make a motion to move House File 1422 to be before the committee and laid over for possible future consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill?
That might be an ominous sign, Mr. Chair.
It does seem to be the case, Representative Mariani. I'm sorry for you, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Couldn't even get out of the gate.
Mr. Chair, this is Representative Erickson. I'd be happy to move the bill.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Erickson. So Representative Erickson moves that House File 1422 be before the committee and laid over for possible further consideration, possible inclusion in future omnibus bill. With that, Representative Mariani, welcome to the committee. Please proceed in introducing your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to my good friend and former chair. We served together in education for a number of years, Representative Erickson, for that motion. I greatly appreciate it. Members, this is a bill that in many ways gets us back to something that we did a number of years ago in 2016. If I remember correctly, we did an appropriation for this type of program delivered by the Santa Foundation. It's a $2 million a year appropriation to provide a combination of after-school, in-school, all-day interventions for currently low-performing students with a focus on underserved students. Everyone knows the racial and economic disparities that we continue to struggle with in our public school systems, and also many of the social science that continues to inform us that we would do best by targeting resources, particularly resources, targeting resources for these students that we're struggling with, and doing so in a way that really aligns with, for many of them, the very unique social challenges that they face in their families and in their communities. So that our delivery system is competent in terms of being able to reach and build strong relationships with these students, with, of course, strong relationships being a key component for success. This particular program does have proven competency and proven success. It's been present in a number of different school districts. And on top of it, it also has a commitment and a focus to being a contributor to pathways for future teachers in our state, and so contributing to the need for our state to also racially, greatly racially diversify our teaching force. And again, tying that back to the importance of having competent relationship skill building. That it doesn't mean that if you're a different race, you can't build those relationships. But if your cultural background, racial background is similar to your students, it certainly helps and facilitates the ability to build those trusting relationships. So, Mr. Chair, I'll stop here. I believe we do have testifiers that can come forward and share more about the program and then help answer questions. I look forward to the conversation.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. First on my list of testifiers is Mr. Sane, founder and CEO of the Sane Foundation. Mr. Sane, welcome to the committee, or welcome back to the committee. Good to see you. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tony Sane. I'm the CEO of the Sane Foundation. I'm going to share some facts that we all know, but first, you know, not understanding that program, I want you to feel the culture. So I'm going to play a quick video, and then I'm going to talk about it.
Tony, the sound is down on my end on this one.
Likewise.
Is it better?
Ms. No. Bird, are we able to provide any assistance here, Ms. Sunderland?
I'm afraid I don't have a copy of the video.
Right.
I think when he goes to play it, there's a button on the lower left. He might have to click to provide the sound too. I was told that in another committee.
Saying, hey, we support you, we care about you, this is why we want you to do better. This is why we want you to achieve academically.
So I need people who are passionate about our kids and our community. And what's been exciting is Dreamline is all of those things. And our students and our parents are also excited about the program.
One of the biggest things that I do is I help these kids process and understand the experiences and problems that they go through on a daily basis.
A lot of these students and youth are facing their childhood escaping them, and that their family situations are trumping their experience as a child.
We're talking about 45 to 50 kids whose lives have been positively impacted. And not only those 50 kiddos, but just what that brings into the classroom, how the environment feels differently when those kids are focused on being successful at school.
You know, even for the students that we help, there's probably, you know, two more for each one of those that, you know, that we could be reaching, but maybe we just haven't even gotten to because we just don't have the manpower yet.
And then also that direct connection with the classroom teachers. It's much stronger in the Dreamline program than it is in any other program that we've done.
That's the thing, it's modeling the behavior that you're trying to get them to kind of pick up on. That is the job, that's part of it. It's just being a role model within the school, yeah.
What I look at is, at age 24, 25, 28, are they a productive member in society? Are they a contributing person in their community?
I do feel that Dreamline has had a major impact on our school culture and climate. Just this morning, I was at an administrator meeting where we reviewed our discipline data, our suspension data. We are down a third less referrals, over 50% less referrals. I mean, it's actually pretty staggering, the number of referrals less that we have had this year for discipline actions.
Dreamline has been a major catalyst for change at Tech High School.
I would be devastated if the program wasn't here next year because, like I said, it's just filled such a huge gap that we've had at South.
At the beginning of the year, I had like 12 missing assignments. I have zero missing assignments right now.
So thank you for that. That gives you an idea of the program. I could give you a lot of facts, and we've heard through even the most recent testimony about our challenges in schools around mental health, and we know there's educational disparities. We know that more support is needed. We know there's a teacher shortage. We know there's a shortage of teachers of color. We know that there's, you know, I wasn't happy about the last testimony, but I was happy that we're identifying the problem. And we know that mentoring is the greatest protective factor against youth and depression, which leads to suicide. And we know more adults in your school leads to safer schools. So when I talk about this program that hits on six things that is priority for everybody in this room right now, I think it's efficient, I think it gets to the point, and I think it supports schools, kids. We put mentors in schools that are there. We're experts in social-emotional competencies. We've been doing this for years before it was, I guess, part of the state standards. But we really increase kids' will to want to learn by putting another adult in the building that has time for them, that can care about them, but also holds them accountable, much like you do your little brother or sister, right? If they don't do the dishes, that's not going to make them a stand-up citizen. So we got to get them all to do their work. But we build relationships based on equity. Another part of our program is our teacher pathway. When we first got funded, you funded it because of the quality of the program. That wasn't good enough for us. Schools started to hire our staff. So we saw the problem coming 7-8 years ago. We developed, we're the first organization in the country and the only one that's not a school or a university that's created a teacher pipeline and graduated. We graduated our first class of master's degree students, and some of them are teaching, and they did so through the pandemic. So we know that we can scale. We've done it before when we've been funded. We've moved to Rochester and we're still in St. Cloud. But we need to start thinking about this differently. With the COVID virus, how many billions of dollars did we invest in finding the vaccine? If we want it to change, we have to invest in the future to build teachers for the next generation. The fact that we're already too late is we have a problem. But if we want to invest in future teachers, we need to know that the universities are going to be with us for 2 to 3 years and we have those jobs. Also, this would allow us to build our organizational capacity to move to outstate Minnesota as well. And we've proven we can move outstate in St. Cloud and Rochester because we know that isolated students in those communities have just as many social problems and a hard time recruiting and retaining teachers. So with that, you know, I want to pass it on to Superintendent Osorio, and I'll follow up at the end. But I think this is this program is a smart play. It covers a lot of bases. It's efficient, and I hope that we built your trust. And, you know, through the pandemic, our teachers that left schools were delivering supplies, serving food, and they served over 2 million pounds of food in this community. And Representative Dabney, we served in your community. And Representative Thompson, we worked with your kids in the school districts. So we have a track record. We're good stewards of money. And we think safe, smart investment for the state to develop a partnership with. And with that, I will pass it over to back to the chair or Superintendent Osorio.
Thank you, Mr. Sane. Superintendent Osorio, welcome back to the committee. Good to see you. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony now.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and greetings, everybody. My name is Christine Tucci Osorio, and I'm the superintendent for North St. Paul, Maplewood, Oakdale, and bits and pieces of other communities around us. And we are a school district that has about just under 11,000 students. We are we're very, very diverse. A lot of times people don't realize that over here in the East Metro. We are 67% students of color in our district, which is quite a bit higher even than Minneapolis Public Schools. We have two core high schools in addition to alternative programs and such. In our two schools, we were so excited to be able to get started with this program with the Dreamline coaches. And currently we've got, the way it works, we have three Dreamline coaches at each of our two high schools, so six total. And each one of those Dreamline coaches has a caseload of 25 to 30 students that they personally mentor and work with. And what's really great about this program is that at the core is a focus on academics. It's on literacy in math. And they do so through developmental relationships. They're highly trained. The Senna Foundation does really incredible work with training these mentors. These Dreamline coaches are in our school all day, every day, 40 hours a week. They're embedded in our programming throughout the day. They also support in after-school programming. And what's pretty amazing, you know, during the pandemic, everybody's had to pivot and think about how to do things differently. But even when we were in complete distance learning at the secondary school level, we had many students we still brought in person. In fact, we have a total between our two high schools of about 500 students who were regularly bused into school even when we were in distance learning for various support systems. Our schools, both of our high schools, have very complicated matrices of how to support struggling learners, how to catch people who need support and identify them. And it's a web of support systems. But our Dreamline coaches have played a critical role in supporting those students during this pandemic year. They not only were in person with students, where we were bringing in students even when the rest were in distance learning, but they supported after-school programming. Students would come in person after school, and or virtual drop-in sessions were held every single day after school for students to come into who needed extra support. A high, incredible return on investment here. Our Dreamline coaches have made incredible impact on our students. And another thing I just want to mention, many times when there's youth programming, kids bond with those mentors. The Dreamline coaches have a goal of making sure the kids bond with their teachers too. It's not just about that relationship. They're very much, how do you help that student be successful in the class and have a continued reconnect with the resources in your school? Just an incredible program. And I have a number of superintendents who have reached out to me recently asking to hear more about it, because they've heard through the grapevine that it's really great. And I'm holding a whole meeting with a bunch of superintendents and my high school principals to talk about it, because so many people keep asking about it. And Tony's been great to work with and supportive in that regard as well. So I couldn't say enough about this program and what a difference it's made for our high school students this year.
Thank you, Superintendent Osorio. Next on the list is Brian Nutter, principal of North Junior High School. Pardon me, sir. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Nutter, and as you stated, I'm the principal at North Junior High School in St. Cloud. I'd like to provide a quick testament to the wonderful things the Sana Foundation's Dreamline program has been able to accomplish at my school. Please know that I share my support for the Dreamline program through a lens of public service to Minnesota citizens. I've spent my entire adult life in public service of some sort, including a 20-plus year career as a citizen soldier and also as a teacher and a principal. My background and passion for public service to Minnesota communities is what has led to my sincere appreciation of the Dreamline program. It's a program that seeks to do better for our community by providing services to our youngest citizens, our students. An additional benefit of the program to our communities is that it helps create a pipeline of future educators from our historically underrepresented populations by employing them as Dreamline coaches and providing incentives for them to pursue professional education and education licensing credentials while working as our Dreamline coaches. I'd briefly like to share what the Sana Foundation's Dreamline program means specifically to my students and my school. The program provides two full-time Dreamline coaches who work in my building every day, as well as a regional director who oversees the coaches at other schools in the region. The Dreamline coaches in my building each work with a caseload of approximately 30 students who need specific academic or social and emotional supports. They do this through scheduled meetings and through push-in support in the students' general education classrooms. When the coaches push into the classrooms to help the students on their caseloads, the added benefit is they're also able to work with other students in the classroom who may need academic supports. Prior to COVID-19, our Dreamline coaches also ran a successful before and after school homework help program in which any of the students at my school could come early or stay late to get help with homework from one of the Dreamline coaches. The last thing I'd like to highlight is that the Dreamline program has become an integral component of my school's multi-tiered system of supports. When students are referred to our MTSS team for academic or social emotional concerns, the Dreamline program is one of the first resources we tap into to provide a tiered level of support to our students. Mr. Chair, I thank you for allowing me this brief opportunity to share some of the many positive aspects of the Dreamline program with you. I'll now be followed by my colleague, Principal Al Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Nutter. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Al Johnson. I'm principal at the McKinley Area Learning Center. And here's the deal for me. I've been in education about 14 years. Nine of those years, I've had the opportunity to work in some way or another with the Sinai Foundation over three different school buildings. And this is what I believe at this point. I think we all can agree that these last 12 months have been very difficult for students and staff. We talked about the social emotional needs that is out there, and I'll be honest, I am tired of programs that are reactive. What I will say when asked about the Sana Foundation is they have found a way to be proactive, and that is with their Dreamline coaches. They do a fantastic job building relationships with the students, and that's where it starts. Students feeling that they're safe, they belong, and now that the Dreamline coaches are building a bridge into the classroom, that, I think that's a fantastic start. Now, it's been my experience, new teachers, it takes a couple of years for new teachers to be able to get good at building relationships with kids. Our Dreamline coaches that are becoming new teachers, they're already at a jump start. They're already building relationships. And I apologize, Tony. I always eye his Dreamline coaches for potential teachers because they get it. And that is critical. And I'll kind of leave you with this piece here. I know that budgets are tight all over the place. What we must do is think of students first, where we put our dollars in. And I can't think of nothing more important than investing in programs that are proven to help our students and staff. So this program has my full support. Again, I'm an alternative learning high school here in St. Cloud, Minnesota. My Dreamline worker does a phenomenal job working with all kids, and I think that is the key. And with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. That is the list of questioners that had asked to be recognized. Members, questions?
Representative Dabney, can I add one thing?
Oh, Mr. Sane, certainly.
I would just like to say that, you know, this is a, you know, we've gotten bipartisan support, and thank you, Representative Erickson, for introducing this. We've had people on both sides of the aisle in the House and the Senate introduce this. We know this is good for kids. We know our organization is trusted. We built a learning center at our Conway Community Center for 60 kids that come in every day and we teach them. We're still serving food even though that the money's not there because the community needs it. We just really want to remind you that we're going to be there for the community when it counts, and we're trusted, and we hope that you work with us to put the kids first. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sane. Representative Damon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Chair Mariani, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I was happy to be a co-signer on the bill last year when it was introduced, and happy once again to be a co-signer. To Principals Nutter and Principal Johnson, I am in your bordering district. I appreciate the testimony that you have given. I know I have students in the district that I represent that are also attending your schools. And so thank you. And then thank you also to Mr. Sana for bringing this forward. We know that proven programs that help students and give that pipeline to teachers, especially those teachers of color, are important. And I thank you for the work, and I'm happy to support this.
Thank you, Representative Damuth. Representative Wolgamont, St. Cloud's been mentioned a time or two.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and that's why I wanted to speak today. First, I just want to thank Mr. Sana and everyone at his foundation for the incredible work that they've done in my community in St. Cloud. I've heard many stories from students and from parents throughout my district about the impactful work and how that's changed your lives. So I just really want to recognize that and thank you for that. I did have a question for Mr. Sana or any of the testifiers, whoever's best qualified to answer this. I just want to know, what would be the consequences if you do not receive base funding? How would that impact the children in my district? How would that impact children all throughout our state? What happens if you don't receive any funding?
Mr. Sane?
Well, you know, we expanded with funding to St. Cloud and Rochester. And when funding went away, we eventually had to, you know, leave Rochester. You know, St. Cloud, we've been holding on. We've been going from 5 schools to 3 schools, doing everything we can. We've had such good results there. I don't have a fundraising team there. So it is really my own general fund that we fund this. We don't know how long we could sustain it. We do now have our first grantor there, so we think the longer we're there, we're going to build it up. Again, we've been good at raising money, but we need a sustainable base, and we think if we can get this, we'll be able to grow more schools in your area, but also there are some other outstate districts that need it. So financially, it would be really hard for us to stay in the schools that we're in that are just not in the local area of our headquarters if we were not to get this funding.
Representative Wolgamont?
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thanks again, Mr. Sana. I'm really proud to be a co-author on this bill, and I'm so thankful for the work that you do for the kids in my community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamott. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to thank Representative Mariani for bringing this forward, and I have a question for Mr. Sana. First, I wanted to say I really appreciate how this program is data-based. It's something that's near and dear to my heart and a bill that I have that would help that. But I use your program, Mr. Sana, as one of the examples of how evidence-based data works and shows how a program is functioning, and yours really does well. So my question is, would you elaborate a little bit? First of all, I understand the mentoring portion, and that is very successful and very important of your program. But you also have a portion where you are grooming and leading people of color into the teaching profession. And would you be able to elaborate on that a little bit, how you're helping prepare them? That's how I'm using the word groom, to prepare them and encourage them to go into teaching.
Mr. Sane?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we get youth studies, social workers, sports management, people that want to work with the public. And I tell them, you know, teaching is the only direct service job that you can raise a family. Otherwise, you're going to be managing people that get to work directly with the kids. So they can enter our program. And right now we with St. Mary's, but we've had five other universities exploring deeper partnerships in different fields. So when you enter our program, it's a two-year program. You take all 60 credits. During the summertime, it's very intensive. It's not easy or a cakewalk. You're going to school from 9 to 4 every day in the summer. You knock out 15 credits each summer, so that's 30. During the school year, every other Friday, you do professional development and training, but those professional development are actually college courses at St. Mary's. I've been able to negotiate with the universities that I dictate the class time if I can have a cohort of size. So being able to grow this, I can say to St. Mary's or St. Thomas, come to me and teach on Monday or Thursday at this time. And so this university helps them do their job in the school. So we use it to replace some of the training. So during the year, all their training are actually master's courses. I've also talked to different universities. We can develop a bachelor's completion that will be elementary ed, which we know there's a shortage of elementary ed teachers as well. So if we can go on scale, we will continue to innovate, but we take away the barriers. We're not making it any easier by the standards. We're taking away the barriers. It's training. They're getting paid. It's a blended model when they're student teaching. So they're still getting paid, but they're still working in those schools that they have great relationships with.
Thank you. Representative Bennett, any further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. I think this is a wonderful way to, you know, kind of another pathway to get teachers of color. And I think the way Mr. Santa is working with our higher ed programs is awesome. And paying these people basically to go to school is what a great way to get more quality teachers. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Chair. There's a few things that I wrote down that I heard Tony Sinea say, and Representative, Superintendent Tanucci, thank you. But I do know that he said he employs kids, they tutor kids. They show them how to give back to the community with the over 2 million pounds of food. And I saw them like filling up cars, pulling up over at the Conway Rec Center in my district, building new teachers. It is a place that the kids in our community go when home's not an option for them at the time. There's a safe space in the community. Our future is being molded. This is something that I wrote. And this is a great investment. And I know I sit in this committee all the time, and I talk about things that make sense for my community, things that, like, I know we have, like, culturally specific issues in our community that are probably different from a lot of other communities. And, Chair, I also remember sharing with the committee how my kids were actually failing on my count. Mm-hmm. Both of my kids were failing because of distance learning, and I had to find a tutor for my kids. Lo and behold, both of my kids are honor roll students right now because of the tutor that we found at the Conway Rec Center, which happens to be the program that Mr. Sinead is talking about. And so I know when we talk about proven results, it gets no better than this when it comes to programs that make sense for my community. And the other piece that I wanted to say for last was Tony has a lot of our youth who we look at because their pants are sagging, and Tony teach them how to pull their pants up and put a belt on, but he employs them and he's saving some of their lives out here. Some of them, we may lose them. Then. And so that's important to me also. We may lose them this summer. And so I always share that. He called me asking me about one kid. I said, she wants to go to UCLA. He said, well, I'm going to put them on the pathway to UCLA, is what he said to me, just calling, talking about the kids that he had in the program. And so I want to uplift and show you how this is a program that makes sense for not only my community, but there's communities just like mine in St. Cloud, Rochester. And I'm just like, I didn't know that it expanded, but this is actually needed. And so I want to say thank you to Representative Mariani, and thank you, Chair, for hearing this. And I definitely want to support any way I can.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't think I could say it much better than Representative Thompson just did. This is a phenomenal program. I have observed it. I think that if we have more time, we could ask Mr. Sanna to describe the training that the coaches experience. But this is a proven program. As Representative Bennett pointed out, there's evidence here that points to the fact that these young students are joyful when I observe them because of the fact that they are engaged in their coursework and with their teachers and with their friends, and they're feeling that that satisfaction that comes when children know how to experience the fact that learning is really something that's going to move them forward. So thank you, Representative Mariani, for being the chief author, and you know, thanks for the great testimony that's come, and especially to Mr. Sanna, because he created this, and I think we should continue to move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Dabney has had to leave the committee for another bill, so he has handed the virtual gavel to me. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to thank Representative Mariani for bringing this bill forward. It is a fantastic program, and Mr. Sanna, thank you so much for all that work you do with Dreamline and for all the kids in our communities all over the state. I also was curious, one question I have, I'm really excited about your pathway to the teachers in the classroom, because we know we need all hands on deck. It's getting harder and harder to get into the profession. I have a brand new teacher in our family who just started this year at Wiper Lake in seventh grade English. So that makes it six in our family now. He's fourth generation teaching on both sides. But I know how hard it is sometimes to try to follow that passion of teaching while you're trying to put food on the table too. So I really appreciate it. One question I have for you, or maybe Superintendent Tutsi Osorio or any of the other superintendents, we talk a lot about teacher retention as well, and the big concern about having, especially our teachers of color, once they get into a job, having that support system when they're in their new school. So any ideas there? I hate to, well, we have experts in the room. I want to pick your brain a bit before we finish this up.
Superintendent Osorio.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Dabney. And great question, Representative Joachim. I will say one thing we've focused on. I'm just going to speak about my district. Many districts talk about trying to recruit, retain staff of color, and many times people end up in paraprofessional roles and non-licensed positions. We've really, really focused on hiring principals of color, leaders of color, so that there are people who are doing the hiring are the people of color, and so that when people do decide to come and work in our system, they don't feel racially isolated. They do feel supported, and that we also start to get better at looking for people who think differently than we do. A lot of times people are guilty of hiring people who talk like they do, sound like they do, share some of the same cultural traits, and we're really trying to practice the skill of being open and listening for how do we bring people who are different perspectives together into a working environment, and then how do we make sure people feel supported and part of a community. We have a staff affinity group of color. We also have an LGBTQ staff affinity group and many others as well, and I will tell you it makes a big difference, I think, that we really intentionally focus on that community building and not having people feel racially isolated in the workplace.
Thank you for that, Superintendent. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Dabney, and thank you, Superintendent, for that. And thank you for mentioning our LGBTQ plus professionals as well. And is there anything, Mr. Sanna, I know your alternative pathway program is relatively new, your teacher training, but have you thought about what to do? I hate to put more work on your plate because you're already extending yourself beyond what your financial means are, and it's greatly appreciated. But have you thought about what a mentoring program would look like once they're in the profession as well, to have a place to touch base with, or any ideas you might have?
Mr. Sonic.
You know, I mean, that's, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's why it's important to get base funding so it's ongoing, because we need to be able to have and build long-term infrastructure and support. If I want to hire someone to become a teacher, I have to negotiate with the university 2 or 3 years ahead of time and to make sure I have a job through that whole time. And at the end of it, once they start teaching, we want to create an environment where we have the bandwidth to stay connected with them and keep them going for the couple of years. Also, we know a lot of times in the past, you went to school, did their student teaching and started teaching and you said, well, I didn't know it was going to be like this. We're entering from a youth development perspective. By the time we become an accepted teacher job, we've already been in a school for 2+ years. We know it's exactly where we want to be. We know what the challenges are. So we're much better prepared to deal with the challenges and know where to get the support. And as an organization, we hope that we can provide the infrastructure and the support and ongoing, but part of that means is guaranteed ongoing funding so we can build a sustainable system.
Representative Youakim, any follow-up?
Thank you so much. No, thank you.
Superintendent Osorio, did you have something you wanted to contribute at this time?
I did. Thank you, Chair Dabney. I just want to mention one quick thing. We talk a lot in my district. I work with my staff and my leaders in particular. Leadership is followership. If nobody's following you, you're not leading anything. And so I just want to make a plug here. Part of what makes this program so amazing is Tony. Tony Senna is an incredible person. And if you've not had the opportunity to see his leadership in action and the way people gravitate to his program because of his leadership. And so that is something about the idea, looking at what is working. And this is something, I'm not even kidding. So many superintendents are calling me because they heard we have the program. What is it like? How do I find out about it? It's something that is really, it's gathering a lot of attention, but it comes back to that leadership that he's built and the true care and investment personally he has in each one of our young folks. And he's just got a really amazing leadership quality about him. So I just had to make a quick statement about that because it's pretty contagious.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Youakim, back to you.
I forgot to also thank Superintendent Tutsi Osorio for your comment about hiring administrators of color. I think both of my superintendents in our district, Dr. Rotomiri Piri-Reed and Dr. Esten Osai, are following in your footsteps with that too. And I think that makes a very big difference as well. So I had to give them a shout out. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mariani? That has exhausted the members with questions. Any closing comments?
Well, great conversation, you know, and I think it really reflects, the co-authorship on this bill really reflects this conversation. And there's a reason for, and the co-authorship really being a bipartisan one, and there's a reason for that. This works, kind of bottom line, which is what us legislators really want to promote in advance. And it works with our school district. So it's about strengthening our public school delivery system as much as it is about strengthening the outcomes for our students. And in fact, the two really should always be one, right? So I really appreciate the conversation here, and I look forward to us advancing this and providing that important sustainable base for this effort to continue to make a big difference in the lives of Minnesota students. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to have this bill heard today.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, for bringing it forward. With that, members, Representative Erickson renews her motion to lay over House File 1422 for further consideration and possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you very much. Thank you to all the testifiers today.